I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 13th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present, Senator Rauscher, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Dunbar, Senator Myers, Vice Chair Senator Kawasaki, Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Klayman will be along shortly. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you, Heather and Susan, for keeping the minutes and running the audio for us. Today we have Senate Bill 280, Oil and Gas Property Tax, Municipal Tax, on the agenda. About 10 days ago, we started hearing this bill going through the fiscal note and the presentation of it. We're going to continue that today. So I'm inviting to the table Mr. Dan Stickle. He is the Chief Economist, Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. And online is Ryan Farnsworth, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law. He's there for questions. So I have asked Mr. Stickle, if, for the benefit of the public particularly, to begin back on slide 10, which just is a brief overview of what property tax in Alaska looks like right now, and then proceed forward. I know there'll be a lot of questions, Mr. Stickle. You're used to that. So at the end of each slide, if you could pause.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
For the record, Dan Stickle. I'm Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue. So we will start on back on slide 11, actually. It's a little bit of background on the property tax. So we've been talking through the bill, and this would provide some property tax benefits for the proposed Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline project. And so start by talking about what is the property tax that we're providing the benefits against. So we, as a state, levy a property tax on the value of all oil and gas property in the state. That state is 20 mils, or 2% of assessed value. The assessment for oil and gas property is done centralized through the Department of Revenue. Any municipal property taxes are allowed as a credit against that state tax. So for all oil and gas property in the state, the tax rate is 2% of assessed value each year, or 20 mils. The LNG plants, which would be part of the Alaska Natural Gas Project, those are not part of the definition of taxable property for state purposes. So currently, LNG plants are not subject to state property. They would be subject to municipal property tax.
Very good. I see no questions, so I'll let you proceed.
Moving on to what the proposed legislation does on slide 13. So the current 2% or 20 mils property tax has been identified as an economic burden on the economics of the project, which decreases the value of that project to developers and increases the cost of delivering gas. And so what the governor has proposed is to replace the entire property tax, both state and local, on the Alaska LNG project with an alternative tax. So there would be an alternative volumetric tax that would apply after a ramp-up period. And that the rate of that tax was kind of set to be roughly equivalent to a 2 mils or 0.2% property tax once the project is at full capacity.
Thank you. I want to recognize Senator Klayman has joined us. I also want to recognize that Senator Merrick has joined us in the audience. Thank you. I'll let you go on.
So moving on to slide 14. So again, there's the bill has a ramp-up period. So the entire project would start out as exempt from property taxes. There would be a ramp-up period. It would be either 10 years or after the project reaches 1 billion cubic feet per day of throughput. And so that's kind of when the billion cubic feet per day is roughly when the export portion of the project would come online with the first full LNG train. After the end of that ramp-up period, there would be the alternative volumetric tax. That would be set at 6 cents per 1,000 cubic feet of throughput in the project, and then there would be a 1% annual increase on that rate. So at the second year, the rate would be 6.06 cents per 1,000 cubic feet, and so on. And then that levy would be split between between the state and the municipalities. The state would collect the state portion of the alternative tax, and the municipalities would collect the municipal portion of that tax.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Can you, what percentage of the project is on state land versus in municipal land?
Sure. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. I believe I have that information in the fiscal note. So about 36.5% of the pipeline is assumed to be on state land, and about 12.2% of the entire project. Those are rough numbers that we use for modeling based on our assumptions of the share of capital cost between the various components of the project.
So follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Can you explain, thank you. Can you explain that distinction, 36.5% on state land versus 12.2% of entire project? Is that the when you say 12.2%, is that the value of the entire project?
Sure, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. So what we've done for modeling purposes is we've assumed that the 6 cents per 1,000 cubic feet would allocate based on the share of capital expenditure that we are assuming for each of those components of the project. Now, once the bill is passed, we would develop regulations. This is one possible way that we would do those regulations. In our modeling, looking at the full value of the expected capital expenditure, about 12.2% of the full spend is expected to be attributed to the share of the pipeline that's in the unorganized borough, which is where the state would receive its share of the alternative volumetric tax with the remainder in the municipalities. And looking just at that pipeline portion, it's 36.5 or a little over one third of the value of the pipeline would be in the unorganized borough.
All right, I don't see just, further. Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
And I see you do reflect that in a couple of slides later, but how is TAPS allocated? Is that kind of a similar allocation?
Sure, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. So for TAPS, it is a centrally assessed evaluation within Department of Revenue. The valuation there, so there's the pipeline component, and we look at, the amount of the pipeline that goes through each municipality. There's also more than just pipe itself. There's compressor stations, which are another significant portion, and other equipment. So roughly mileage is a good rough estimate, but then you also have to look at where the various compressor stations are located. And we do that in our modeling for the AKLNG project as well.
Follow-up?
No, that's right.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. A question I had is that I'm interested in the spur line, interested in straddle plant, and then associated facilities. What part of that would be tax exempt?
Sure, Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. So the legislation is for the AKLNG project itself. That currently does not include the Fairbanks spur line. So the alternative volumetric tax and the exemptions would apply to the main line, and then the spur line would be separate.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Sure. And then so the associated facilities along with that particular line would include a straddle plant and probably compression. Is that somewhere in here, indicated somewhere in this bill?
Sure. Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. So the bill itself deals with the main AKLNG project, currently does not include provisions for the Fairbanks spur line.
Okay. That's good enough. Thanks.
Senator Klayman.
On the 1% increase from 6 cents to 6.06 cents, is there a cap when that 1% increase stops, or does this 1% increase go on as long as there's gas going through.
Yeah, Senator Klayman through the chair. So the 1% adjustment would take place each year based on the prior value into perpetuity.
Senator Myers.
Thank you. So going back to the Fairbanks spur, if I'm understanding you correctly, effectively you're saying that the current tax law would apply to the Fairbanks spur, so that if the Fairbanks borough wanted the wanted their residents to get a lower price on the gas because it's going to get directly passed on, it wouldn't do any good to create a local borough exemption, because then the money would just there would just be more, less money going to the borough and more money going to the state. Is that accurate?
Senator Myers, through the chair, that's my understanding. Yes. So the spur line is currently not carved out in this bill and be treated under current law.
Okay. And then follow up for
Senator Myers.
Yeah, thank you. So then if IGU owned the spur, which is a borough-owned entity, would that then make the spur tax-exempt to the state?
Senator Myers, through the chair, I may call on a lifeline here. I do have some Department of Law available to talk about the specifics of exactly where the line gets drawn in property tax.
So online we have Ryan Farnsworth. He is with the Department of Law. There's also David Herbert, commercial analyst, tax division, and Matt Kissinger. So you're thinking Mr. Farnsworth would be appropriate. Mr. Farnsworth, welcome. If you would introduce yourself and answer Senator Myers' question.
Thank you, through the chair. This is Ryan Farnsworth, AAG with the Department of Law. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question about the Fairbanks spur line.
Okay.
Senator Myers?
Well, I guess just in general, is something, if any oil and gas type property was owned by, I mean, you already got IGU, is owned by the borough, does that automatically make it tax exempt from the state?
I don't know. I'd have to look at that. Thank you, through the chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Farnsworth. If you would dig into that and respond in writing to the committee, we will my office will distribute it to the rest of the committee. Next up is Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, through the chair, I was wondering how many munis are collecting tax from TAPS?
Senator Rauscher, through the chair, so I believe it's four. Or primarily for?
And follow-up, Senator Rauscher?
Are they all collecting the same mill rate, I guess? Is that how we ask the question? I don't know.
Sure, Senator Rauscher, should the chair. So, no, the mill rate is different. So the way it works for TAPS is there is a 20 mil tax that's levied by the state, and then each municipality that has a portion of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline in it levies their municipal rate, and the municipal, whatever they pay to the municipality is allowed as a credit against the state tax. However, a municipality has to charge the same tax rate on the oil and gas property that they charge to all other property. So the various municipalities have different municipal rates on their share of TAPS. And then the owner of TAPS pays the 20 mils regardless.
Follow up, Senator Rauscher.
So before this bill would take place, it would be similar for the gas line?
That's correct, Senator Rauscher.
Thank you.
Senator Klayman.
Following up, when you talked about the four municipalities or local governments that collect from TAPS, in that instance, are we specifically talking about the pipeline as opposed to Alyeska, which may be paying property tax to Anchorage, even though Anchorage doesn't have – even if the pipeline doesn't go through Anchorage? Are the four where the pipeline goes through?
Sure, Senator Klayman through the chair. And there may be a small amount of ancillary liability going to other municipalities. But I was looking primarily at the municipalities that that this line would go through also, which would be starting in the North Slope Borough, passing through the Fairbanks Borough, the Mat-Su Borough, and then the Kenai Peninsula. primary four impacted.
And which are the four municipalities that collect from TAPS today? The ones you were referencing?
Those are the four I was referencing, Senator Klayman, through the chair.
Thank you.
All right, I see no further. Senator Dunbar?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Wouldn't it be Valdez, not Kenai, for the TAPS?
Valdez, yeah.
Should be three.
Yeah. Senator Dunbar, through the chair, that would be correct. Yes, okay. Apologize for the misspeaking.
No worries. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I see no further questions. We'll go on to slide 15, actually 16.
All right. And Madam Chair, to Senator Meyer's question, I think I know the answer off, but I wanted to be sure before putting that on the record. So we will get back to you with the details on that question. All right. So that went through the kind of what does this bill do? And then we were going to walk through the official fiscal note. And I believe when I was here, was it last week, there was some confusion around the fiscal note. There was a fiscal note with an indeterminate number that had been provided. That was due to a technical error in the somewhere along the fiscal note system going from when we turned it in to when it showed up on your desk. There should be numbers on the front of the fiscal note. And I believe an updated version has been provided.
Yes, that is accurate. We have an update from Department of Revenue. We also have a DCCED fiscal note. I have asked, just for committee members' information, Department of Natural Resources if there was a fiscal note from their department, and they said no, they need no additional staff related to this bill, just informational for you. All right, Mr. Sickle, I'll let you proceed.
All right, so moving on to slide 16. So this just talks about our process in putting the fiscal note here together. So we are showing a positive fiscal note here. The assumption here is that the project would not go forward without property tax relief, and so any revenue is better than no revenue, and so. What we're showing here is the positive impact of the alternative volumetric tax. The fiscal note convention is that we are only showing the revenue associated directly with the tax that's being changed in the fiscal note. So what you're seeing on the front of the fiscal note is the revenue from the alternative volumetric tax in the first 2 years that it's in place. And then we do have substantial supplemental information that looks more holistically at what would the project generate under current law if it went forward, what would the benefits be under this proposal, looking more broadly, including production tax, royalties, things like that.
Sure.
Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Do you know what the breakdown was between the state share and the local share under the Municipal Advisory Gas Project Review Board annual report in 2015?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I'm sure I have it in my files. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Is 40% for the state sound about right?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I don't recall.
Is there anybody online that might recall?
So the question is going before Mr. Farnsworth, Mr. Herbert, and Mr. Kissinger. Do any of you have an answer to Senator Wilikowski's question? Sounds like a no.
Yeah, apologies, and through the chair, we'll be happy to get back to you with that detail. I was not personally involved in those negotiations in 2014.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to sort of re-ask a question I asked the last time we had you before us, Mr. Stickle, and perhaps there's been more evidence. You know, it's been a while since I asked this question. So you assume that the reduction from the rate to 2 mils is positive because that's what helps the AKLNG go forward. It wouldn't go forward without it. So my first question is, what is the data that you're relying on for that assumption? And the second is, if we alter this bill before us from 2 mils to, let's say, 18 mils, would the department still assume that the pipeline went forward?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So to the first part of the question, the assumption that the project would not go forward is what is – that's what went into the fiscal note. That is an assumption. As to where you would draw the line if you had an 18 mil tax, that would be something that we would take a look at and discuss and decide what to put in a future fiscal note.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
Well, a question first for the committee. Can you get a – I don't want you to know the question is. Can I get a fiscal note on a proposed amendment?
Mr. Stickle, the proposed amendment would have to be before the committee and actually adopted before you'd have to get a fiscal note. Am I correct?
Chair Geisel, I believe that's the process.
So can I have follow-up questions?
Follow-up. Senator Dunbar.
If I proposed 18 amendments – 17 amendments going from 3 mils to 20 mils, mm-hmm. at what point would the assumption – would the department stop assuming that there would be a positive impact on the state?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, that's a fascinating question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head. We have to think about that.
We do need to think about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. Madam Chair, through the chair. So, the first bullet, the revenue impact of this bill is positive because it assumed that the Alaska LNG project will not proceed without property tax relief. That would also account and or actually include all the municipalities, that it would be positive for all them because it assumes that the project will not go forward without it.
Senator Rausser, through the chair, that's correct. And again, this is an assumption that went into the fiscal note, and we do present a variety of analysis so that you know folks can draw their own conclusions.
There are charts that show different sensitivities further on in the presentation, so we probably don't want to get too bogged down on slide 16, but. Senator Wilikowski, questions?
Yeah. Did Glenn Farne tell you they wouldn't build this pipeline or this project without this 6-cent number?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, so they did not make that as an absolute definitive statement, did indicate that the property tax under current law is challenging to the project, and then that's what we've heard from AGDC and consultants as well.
Would you like to ask that question to Mr. Kissinger, Senator Wilikowski? He is online.
Sure.
Mr. Kissinger, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski has a question.
I was just curious if because we keep hearing that there was an assumption that the project wouldn't go forward unless we did this 6 cent per thousand cubic feet number, and I'm just curious if that's the number that Glenn Farne had asked for.
Senator Wilikowski through the chair, and this is Matt Kissinger for the record. No, this number came about through our benchmarking with other regimes, other areas, other tax regimes, both within the U.S. and internationally, and seeing that we were about one full order of magnitude higher than them, meaning 10 times higher. And so that's where the original amount came from. Glenn Farne have never stated to us, you know, that they will not do the project without this legislation. But in our own analysis that began as far back as 2020, when we did our economic stage gate, property tax was identified as one of the most significant levers after gas price and potentially the loan guarantees, and really on the order of magnitude of the loan guarantees and impact to the projects. We know that companies have not been clamoring to come and do this project, and it is a difficult project that has had to be finessed in order to get a developer to move as far as Glenn Farne have with it. And so the belief is that in order to manage the magnitude of cost overrun risks that this project faces. And in order for the developer to take that on, there needs to be sufficient room or headroom within their returns for that to make sense. And so this is all about making sufficient headroom within those returns so that they can manage the project, including its cost overrun risks.
Senator Wilkowski.
Is it based strictly on a comparison of property tax relief or property taxes that gas lines pay in other jurisdictions? Is that fundamentally where you came up with this number?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, more looking at LNG projects, competing LNG projects, and the property tax burdens that they faced.
Senator Wilkowski.
And I know there have been tax incentives in other states like Texas and Louisiana and Oklahoma, but I'm curious if when you looked at those property tax relief that was granted, you also looked at other taxes that the companies had to pay, like sales tax or gas tax or maybe corporate income tax or other things that would cause costs to be higher in those jurisdictions.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, we had gas strategies do the first full benchmarking on this. So we've also had Woodmac look into it, and I think you have your own analysis from Gap and Klein that highlights property tax as one of the biggest obstacles. The gas strategies assessment did look at overall take, but then narrowed down just on property taxes. Overall take in Alaska is also quite high. More difficult to benchmark with the foreign ones, where you have most of these regimes under production sharing agreements, but certainly higher than in Texas.
Senator Wilkowski.
Has there been any talk about, or are you aware that of any likelihood that the federal government may subsidize a portion or all of this project?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, as I mentioned when we did the economic stage gate, one of the three levers that we identified was the federal loan guarantees, which originated from the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Act of 2004. Those were originally written for a pipeline to deliver gas down to the North American market. And those were amended with the bipartisan infrastructure law to be used on this project. That is the route that we've looked into for federal support of the project, so the existing legislative support.
Senator Wilkowski.
So you're not anticipating that there could be a federal subsidy of this project?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, what we are looking at, No, I'm not. We are looking for, the project to stand on its own legs absent that. And we believe that the project does, provided that we optimize it in these ways. Again, lowering the gas price, which we already worked on, getting the loan guarantees, which we've already achieved to some degree, and finally, the property tax changes.
It's Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're familiar with the MAG report, the Municipal Advisory Gas Project Review Board. They did a pretty extensive report in 2015. That was when the producers were contemplating a pipeline. And at that time, there was a tentative agreement by the producers, who were the constructors of the project, to provide a construction pilt of $800 million over the construction, five-year construction period, and then another, I believe, $600 to $800 million per year in property taxes. And so this is a really significant decrease in the amount that the local communities would get and the state would get. There's no impact funds at all under this proposal that you have in front of us. So we're going from 800 to zero on that. And then we go from 600, I believe, to $800 million per year to $74 million per year. And I'm just curious why that's a pretty drastic drop. And I think that's going back to 2015. So that's 11 years ago. When you factor in inflation, that's even a bigger drop. And I'm curious why the producers would have agreed to that back then, tentatively at least, and there's such a dramatic drop now.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I would just point to the lack of success of that endeavor.
Any further questions? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to slide 17.
All right, again, Dan Stickle for the record. Slide 17 just touches on one of the comments earlier that the fiscal note itself is associated with just the revenue from just the alternative tax to the state. And so the fiscal note itself does not address the municipal revenues and then all of the other revenues associated with the project, including production tax, corporate tax, royalty revenue, and any property tax from associated development that is not directly part of the LNG project.
So a question, increased production tax, how will gas production tax, how will oil production tax increase with the deductions for gas production costs?
Sure, Chair Giesel. So one of the assumptions in the analysis, which I'll get into later on in the presentation, is that there will be expanded oil development on the North Slope, in particular at Point Thompson. There will be hundreds of millions of barrels of additional oil condensate production that we assume will be unlocked at Point Thompson with a major gas sale that would not otherwise be produced. And so the net effect of that, after accounting for any impact of associated lease expenditures and tax credits, the impact of that is positive to the state. Through the life of the project, to the tune of about $1.4 billion net positive to the state for oil production tax and an additional $8.6 billion of gas production tax.
Mr. Sickle, is that over the life of the – over what time period?
That's over life of project, okay, through 30 years of production.
Okay.
So the production tax becomes – there are some costs incurred, as these development costs are incurred. So there are a couple years of reductions to overall production tax revenue as the project is coming online. But I think by 2031, we expect it to be a net positive. And then from there on, it's just a growing net positive.
Thank you. So the corporate income tax, you're expecting that will increase coming from Conoco and Exxon, since Hillcorp doesn't pay a corporate income tax, and neither will Glenfarne.
Chair Giesel, without naming specific taxpayers, correct. So we assume that the midstream owner is not subject to corporate income tax, and we assume that the upstream companies are subject to corporate income tax to the extent that they currently are subject to that tax. So a portion of the incremental income it pays corporate income tax, and then a portion does not. And it's roughly two-thirds pay corporate income tax for the upstream component.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions on this slide? All right. Seeing none.
All right. So moving on to slide 18. So this table shows an estimate of the revenues from the alternative volumetric tax based on the spring forecast and our baseline AKLNG assumptions. So these are the numbers that go into the front of the fiscal note for the state component. We've also extended this out through a 10-year time horizon and included each of the impacted municipalities. Fiscal year 31 through 33 represents a ramp-up period, with fiscal year 34 representing the first year of full revenue from full operations of the pipeline, We anticipate that calendar 33 is going to be the first full year of operations there. So at full operations, the state is expected to receive about $9 million per year from the alternative volumetric tax, municipalities receiving about $64 to $65 million per year.
Question, Senator Wilikowski.
If you didn't have an alternative volume tax and you just had the existing state property tax laws in place, what would you expect the numbers to be in 2035 for total midstream AVT, state AVT, and
sure.
total AVT impact?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. So if you assume that the project goes forward without this bill in place, at full capacity, the total property tax would be about $497 million per year. And then with the AVT, it's about $64 million per year. Those are totals to the municipalities. And then the state would be additional to that.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
What would the state be?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I don't have that number printed out in front of me. I could probably get it from a lifeline if you wanted that.
Yes, I would.
All right, which lifeline?
From Mr. Herbert. So we're looking for the 2035 state property tax from the gas line without the AVT.
Mr. Herbert?
Hello, this is David Herbert, Functional Officer of the Department of Revenue. Could you repeat the question real quick?
Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. I'm curious what the state property tax would be in 2035 under existing law. Instead of $9 million, what would it be under existing law?
I don't have that number through the chair. I don't have that number right in front of me, but I can certainly prepare it for you.
Sure. And I'll just jump in. Apologies that we didn't have that exact number handy. So roughly, the AVT is roughly equivalent to a 2 mils tax. So roughly, the tax under current law would be about $90 million, and we will provide that the exact breakout there.
Senator Wilikowski, further follow-up?
I do. Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
And then do you anticipate the companies that are producing the pipeline or any of the producers to be able to use lease expenditures or take advantage of our current tax law to write off lease expenditure costs in the production of gas or in the production of gas incidental to oil or in production of pipelines delivering gas?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. So we assume that the midstream operations of the AKLNG project are completely separate from the upstream, so a third party, and then those midstream costs of operating the pipeline has no impact on the upstream oil and gas production tax. For the upstream oil and gas production tax, we have detailed modeling of current tax law, and we do assume that any additional lease expenditures incurred for additional development on the North Slope would be allowed against the oil production tax as under current law. We also model out the impact of per taxable barrel credits and how the additional gas production tax impacts the application of those.
Senator Wilikowski.
Have you modeled that? Do you have those numbers?
Yes, Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. Yes, that's modeled out, and that rolls up into some of the coming slides and the total production tax revenues that I mentioned earlier.
Very good. Senator Wilikowski.
Do you expect any costs in 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, I guess before the production starts ramping up, do you expect any negative impact to the state treasury from the lower from the lease expenditure deductions?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, yes. So we assume that there will be some temporary reductions to oil production tax as companies are investing in expanding production, in particular at Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson. That is baked into the modeling. I think I have a chart coming up that shows the year-by-year impacts of that. And then again, by 2031, it becomes a net a net positive to the state.
Senator Rauscher, did you have questions?
I'm good now.
All right. Any further questions, Senator Wilkowski?
No. Okay.
All right. Seeing none, I'll let you move on.
All right. So slide 19 talks about expenditures associated with the fiscal note. So the way the alternative volumetric tax is set up, it would create a new tax type within the tax division, so there would be some additional costs. We are requesting one additional staff position to carry out the administration of this alternative volumetric tax. And then there would also be one-time costs for upgrading of our tax revenue management system to incorporate the new tax type.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sure you've mentioned this before, but I'd like you to reiterate. Why do it this way? That is to say, why create a whole new type of tax and a whole new, you know, system here with new employees? Why not use our existing tax system, property tax system, just drop the mill rate to the point where it's the equivalent in terms of dollar value to the producer?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, that's a policy call. I don't know if Mr. Kissinger would want to opine on that.
I would, yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to hear Mr. Kissinger, although, to be honest, I'd like to hear what Mr. Kissinger has to say. But to me, he's not really the policymaker that should be making that recommendation because, I want to hear what he has to say first. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Mr. Kissinger, can you respond, please, to the question Senator Dunbar is asking?
Yes, this is Matt Kissinger for the record, Senator Dunbar through the chair. I think ultimately you achieve a greater level of alignment between the project and the municipalities this way and the state itself, where increased throughput is a win for all. And that's not something that you generally achieve with the current statutes.
Senator Dunbar, follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Could you explain what that means? I mean, what do you mean by alignment? The value of the property should be tied to the throughput in the sense that that's, you know, how you determine how much it's valued because it's producing a certain amount of profit. Why not use a system more similar to the one we have at TAPS?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I think if you look at the history of TAPS, it's a history of litigation, whereas this would be a simpler approach that achieves the same means. And I'd say that the actual alignment is greater in this case because there's no argument around the value. It's simply all parties achieving a greater amount of throughput, all achieve a greater amount of payment.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
So one of the things we hit on before, and this might just be a drafting error, but the revenue Department of Revenue modeled it this way, was it was a you know, as the throughput increases, as the years go by, it increases by 1%, but it's 1% of that 6 cents, right? It'd be much cleaner to just add a mill each year, right? 2 mil to 3 mil to 4 mil to 5 mil. Everyone would sort of understand that, and you'd have 18 years of leeway till you got back to where we are now. 18 years after you hit the point where, you know, you're producing, in this case, a billion, but perhaps that'll get lowered back to the 250 million. So do you need, assuming we keep this AVR system, would the project still go forward if that number were altered, not to 1%, but to whatever percentage equaled 1 mil? That is to say, it'd go from 6 cents to whatever number it is, 7 cents or 9 cents. Maybe it's a fraction of a cent, but not 0.0606, right? Which is such a fractional amount as to be irrelevant. So, Mr. Kissinger, does a project still go forward if we get the equivalent value to one additional mil per year after we're in full production?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, the project goes forward when all the financing is in place, both the debt and the equity. And the more attractive that the project is to equity investors, the greater likelihood that the project will go forward. I don't think there is a sort of cut and dry, yes, it'll go forward with this, no, it will not go forward with that, to be honest. When we talk about this 1%, it should be understood that it is to approximate a level of inflative impacts. And so if you think that inflation averages somewhere between 2 and 2.5%, this would account for sort of 50% of the costs being subject to inflation. So it's an approximation more for inflation or the value of the dollar over time than anything else.
Follow up, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, even by that logic, it seems like we should at least set it to inflation then, the average of inflation. But I think there's something else happening in the math. I'm trying to do it in my head about, because we're doing a fraction of a fraction, and I think you end up with a smaller amount. But I'll leave it at that for now, Madam Chair. Thank you for the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Kissinger.
Thank you. Senator Myers.
Thank you. So, Mr. Stickel, you're anticipating needing one extra person to carry out the new type of tax. let's say we left the taxes in place as they are and the project moved forward. This is a very large project, probably going to have a lot of paperwork involved. Would you, obviously, if there's no bill, there's no fiscal note, but would you be coming back to us in a couple of years asking for another person or two or three dedicated specifically to doing the property taxes on the gas line and associated facilities?
Senator Myers, to the chair, yes. The workload associated with doing a full assessment and appraisal of a project of this magnitude with the three major components and the associated infrastructure, that would require additional staff. Our staff are stretched thin as it is, and so taking this on, given our existing staff load, would be extremely challenging.
Follow-up, Senator Myers.
Yeah, just quick follow-up. So I don't think we have Mr. Spanos on the line, but he'd probably be the best person to answer this. But just kind of a off the top of your head, I don't want to hold you to this in future years, just a rough guess, how many extra people do you think that would mean?
Sure, Senator Myers, to the chair. So I know it would be at least one. I think we would potentially be looking for maybe a couple.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on slide 19? See, Senator Dunbar.
And not a question, Madam Chair, just a comment. With other revenue bills, we often hear the counter argument that the implementation costs are too high, and so we shouldn't before this new tax. Here the administration is putting forward a novel new tax, and they are rightly asking for more staff to implement it. But because they think it will help the project go forward and raise more money, we're willing to do that. And so I just think it's a good example. And for future revenue discussions, I hope we all keep that in mind. We have to pay for revenue, but it's sometimes worth doing if we want a new type of revenue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. All right, moving on then to slide 20.
All right. Slide 20 just shows the expenditures portion of our fiscal note. Again, for that one position, requesting about $170,000 per year, and then additionally a $250,000 one-time request for upgrading our IT systems to incorporate the new tax type.
Any questions on this? All right, seeing none.
All right, and then the next section of the presentation gets into detailed project modeling. So starting with slide 22, so I have several sets of slides that kind of lay out the model structure and the assumptions that went into the model before going through the results themselves. So the DOR maintains a pretty in-depth gas line model. It's broken into two main components. So we have a midstream model that estimates the cash flows and revenues from the AKLNG project itself. So this includes the gas treatment plant, the gas pipeline, and then an LNG export facility. And then we have a separate upstream model that estimates the cash flows and revenues for the upstream producers, both for the gas production directly and then for any associated oil production and the related impacts there.
All right, no questions.
Slide 23. So our model was based on many assumptions, and this slide shows some of the sources for that. So the spring 2026 revenue forecast is used as kind of the baseline for our upstream assumptions, including oil prices, baseline company spending, baseline oil production. Our official forecast does not include AKLNG related project revenue. And so most of the project revenue, project assumptions have been developed in collaboration with AGDC, including some of the key assumptions like project cost, gas price, and what level of additional upstream development there would be with a gas line project as opposed to under our baseline spring forecast.
All right.
Slide 24. So our model covers 30 years of full project capacity or 32 years of LNG sales given the ramp up period. We assume that pipeline tolls will be set based on 20 years at full capacity, and we assume that there will be a 10% rate of return provided to the developer. That's an assumption. We have the ability to model higher and lower rates of return. But the way the modeling works is we look at the cost of the gas going into the project. We look at the cost of the project itself. We assume a 10% rate of return to the developer. And then we look at what is the delivered cost of gas that balances that out. So we are assuming about a $46 billion total construction cost. That is in 2026 dollars. That's an assumption that was based on pre-Glenfarne estimates provided by AGDC back in 2023. And we've simply brought that up to 2026 base year based on inflation. We understand that there's uncertainty around that assumption. So we have quite a bit of sensitivity analysis so we can look at higher capital costs.
Questions on this slide, Senator Myers.
Yeah, thank you. Got a question for Mr. Kissinger. Mr. Kissinger, if you're listening, my understanding is that Glenfarne has completed the FEED study for the pipeline portion, but the FEED study for the gas treatment plant and the LNG plant, liquefaction and export plant, are still ongoing. Is that correct?
This is Matt Kissinger for the record. Senator Myers to the chair. Yes, that is correct.
And then quick follow-up.
Yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you. So Mr. Stickle's giving us a $46.2 billion construction cost estimate. Is that, without asking you to give away too much, is that something roughly in the general vicinity of what we're anticipating for the entire project, pipeline, treatment plant, LNG plant?
Senator Myers, through the chair, yes, it is. It still is within the range of what we consider reasonable for this. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? So I have. Go ahead, Senator Wilkowski.
Just on that number, has AGDC or anyone suggested that the number might be different than 46.2 billion? Because I've heard different numbers thrown out. I've heard maybe 57 billion. I've heard 60 billion. What's your latest best estimate of what it will be?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I don't believe that you've heard any of those other numbers from the project. I think maybe others have opined or perhaps speculated or just wanted to throw a number out there. The number that we have carried has been $44 billion, which is now inflation adjusted to $46 billion. And it roughly aligns with what we've seen out of the Class 2 cost estimate for the pipeline. Granted, again, there is cost overrun risk. And so we've moved from a Class 4 cost estimate to a Class 2 cost estimate on the pipeline, which narrows down your cost overrun risk, but does not eliminate it, obviously.
Senator Wilkowski.
So your Class 2 cost estimate, as you sit here, is $46.2 billion as of today.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, Glenfarne, as you know, have made the updated FEED estimates confidential, and we're keeping that confidential. But the number that we have carried forward, which is the 2019 number corrected up to 2023 through inflation adjustment, it's, as I said, still within the range of what's reasonable. Based on what we have seen out of that class two cost estimate.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
So then the, yeah, thank you. The IRR 10% pre-tax tolling, is that, I'm just curious how that compares to like in-state rates of return for gas lines and NSTAR. I think they've got an 11.8% rate of return, a rate return on equity. I'm curious if what how it compares to NSTAR and how it compares to rates of return or internal rates in other projects.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, if I have looked at a range of published rates on pipelines or published returns that have been approved on pipelines, I think the sort of 10 to 12% after tax, or, sorry, a 12% pre-tax or 10% after tax would probably be something that would stand out as reasonable.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
Say that again. So here it says toll value set by requiring internal or equity return IRR of 10% pre-tax. You're saying, are you saying that's accurate, or are you saying it should be 12% is more likely?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. Again, so this would really depend on the strength of the contracts that the project is wrapped in as you go into your project finance. And so if you had very, very strong contracts for the vast majority of the volumes, which of course you've heard from Glenn Farn that they're seeking to get 16 million tons out of the total 20 million tons under these long-term contracts with creditworthy buyers, then you can go lower on that. And the more you de-risk your cost overrun risk, the lower you can go with that number. But again, we're kind of going into uncharted territories here. Once we get the debt in place and we start raising the capital, it'll be up to the developer to demonstrate to the other investors that it's a reasonable return that they're getting for the risks that they're taking. The cost of capital benefit of going to a developer over the producer still.
All right. No further follow-up, Senator Wilikowski. So I'll just make a comment. Mr. Kissinger, a member of your team spoke to a public group on Friday and cited $57 billion as the more likely cost of the project. Just letting you know where that question originated. So no other questions on slide 24, so we'll move on to slide 25.
I'm sorry, but did I hear you say Matt Kissinger said that?
No, I said a member of your team said that.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Ms. Senator Myers.
Yeah, I'd just be curious to know who that was and when, at what meeting.
There was a small public meeting on Friday at which Mr. Begich was a guest speaker.
Okay.
So, Mr. Stickle, we're on to slide 25 now.
All right. Again, Dan Stickle for the record. Slide 25. Details some of the upstream assumptions that go into the modeling. So we assume a gas purchase price of $1.50 per 1,000 cubic feet in current dollars. That was based on advice from AGDC. Again, that is another one of the major assumptions along with the capital cost with some uncertainty around it. So we provide a sensitivity analysis around various gas purchase prices. For our initial phase one production, we assume a gas source that is not Prudhoe Bay or Point Thompson. Great Bear Pantheon has been mentioned as one possible source. There's other sources on the slope that could also contribute. But basically, we assume that first initial gas that is flowing just to Alaskans and gets the pipe going, that will not have associated oil impacts with it. And we do assume that Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson will be the anchor for the the main project and the primary sources of gas once the full export project comes online. For Prudhoe Bay, we assume no net impacts to oil production. There's reasons that oil production could increase or decrease in any given year at Prudhoe Bay. We assume for the modeling that roughly balances out. But there are additional investments in Prudhoe Bay made to bring the gas production on. We assume significant increases to oil production at Point Thompson, as I mentioned earlier. The addition of the gas development results in 270 million additional barrels of oil production over life of project, and that is a major component of the state benefits from upstream development.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to understand what you said, when you said the oil could increase or decrease just on its own, not because of this project, but just because that's what it does, right?
Sure. Senator Wilkowski, Senator Rauscher through the chair. So we have a baseline production forecast for all of the oil fields in our spring 2026 revenue forecast. We assume that adding the gas production on top of the oil production will not change the oil production profile at Prudhoe Bay from what's in the official revenue forecast.
Thank you very much.
Senator Wilkowski.
I'm just curious about the yet-to-find gas because I can't recall seeing that reflected in previous fiscal notes. Is that when modeling previous gas line proposals, has the department included yet-to-find gas?
Senator Wilkowski through the chair, yes, and that's a pretty common feature of these gas modelings. So there's a known resource at Prudhoe Bay and a known resource at Point Thompson. We assume that those will contribute and fill the pipeline for the first many years. But then once you get towards the end of the project, there is some space in the pipeline to fill. That could be additional development at those fields. It could be additional other fields coming online. But this is consistent with how we've modeled for previous iterations of the project.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just going back to the previous point you made, the impact of oil production at Prudhoe Bay assumed to be zero. Have the producers said that to you?
Senator Dunbar through the chair. So there was some information that came out from BP many years ago when they were involved in the project. It was presented to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission that basically supported that assumption. And that's what us and AGDC have kind of hung our hat on for this assumption. We have not received detailed information from the current producers that would support or refute that.
Follow-up,
Senator Dunbar.
Well, I guess it's not a question. I wonder if we can get that information from them, not us, but you as on behalf of the state. If it was BP, then it was quite a while ago. And I wonder if their assumptions, just based on the nature of the field, have changed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I suspect that would be in an AOGCC hearing or final order. Would that be accurate, Mr. Stickle? We can certainly contact AOGCC and ask for that document.
Yeah, Chair Giesel, I believe the document is publicly available. We'd be happy
Thank
to provide
you.
That.
Senator Dunbar, we'll do that.
Question?
Yes, Senator Clayman.
And we're actually talking about a document from when BP still was here, which was 10-plus years ago.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. I'm just
when
sure.
Hillcorp came in and took over North Slope, so it would have been at least 10 years, yeah. I have a question about Great Bear Pantheon. So what is there some kind of proved gas there? They haven't produced anything yet. How can we be counting on them to supply the state in phase one?
Sure, Chair Giesel, and that's a good question. So that's why I said Great Bear Pantheon or some other field. I think there was hope that they could anchor the beginning of the project. There's some uncertainty around that. So I know some other fields have been discussed as potential sources as well.
Very good. So I've heard that statement also that, you know, they were planning to be producing gas, and they made a comment alluding to selling that gas, for zero cost because it wasn't really what they were going after. So how would you value gas that's being given at zero cost?
Chair Giesel, so assuming we're talking for oil and gas production tax purposes, or DNR would also have to look for royalty purposes. So that is a question that we would have to go as a department and take a look at. So we do have a prevailing value for North Slope gas currently that's based on sales to utilities. And basically when a company sells gas, they pay a higher of their sales price or the prevailing value. We would need to look at whether any sales into the pipeline should be included in that prevailing value calculation or not. That's not a determination we can make yet, as it would be a hypothetical. Broadly speaking, a Department of Revenue would need to implement regulations around gas pricing regardless if the AKLNG project goes forward. So there's some uncertainty around that we would want to kind of tighten up in regulation so that everyone knows exactly how we'd be valuing that for tax purposes.
Very good. That's good to know. Senator Myers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So question for Mr. Kissinger. So Mr. Kissinger, we've got on here phase one production from Great Bear Pantheon or somebody else. My understanding from information that was shared last year was that the Great Bear Pantheon field, while small, was attractive to begin phase one because it had extremely low CO2 and then it was effectively utility grade without any sort of treatment. But since then, Great Bear has run into problems. They don't have a confirmed resource ready to come out of the ground. If we went ahead with phase one and we're trying to deliver gas to Fairbanks and South Central in 2029, and Great Bear hadn't found anything else, do we have a field in Prudhoe or Point Thompson or somewhere else that's got gas low enough with a low enough CO2 content that we wouldn't need to treat it, or would we need a treatment plant to go with phase one?
Matt Kissinger for the record, Senator Myers through the chair. There's obviously there's far more than enough gas for phase one. There's enough gas for hundreds of years of phase one just under production up on the North Slope. You are right that the Great Bear Pantheon gas is ideal because it has very, very low CO2. I'd also argue, and the pricing on that, as was put forth on the public press release, was between zero and a dollar. So there's a price for that gas. And I'd argue that is the market price for that. And one thing to note is in the lower 48 or even in Canada, you'll sometimes see certain hubs like AECO go negative, right? Especially when oil prices go high and they begin drilling out sweet spots that have a lot of associated gas. And then that gas has to be forced into the market. It forces the price of gas down. In fact, you're seeing this right now where, West Texas and Brent are going up, and that's causing Henry Hub to go down. Oh. And so it's not uncommon for gas to be sold at negative prices, even in very liquid markets.
Follow up, Senator Myers?
As for the gas there, they have a lot of gas, so it's not a small field. We had Ryder Scott do a third-party due diligence. This is AGDC. We hired them to do that due diligence. And Ryder Scott confirmed that there is several TCF of gas. But they have not yet demonstrated the ability to produce the liquids that they need on a commercial basis. I wouldn't say that they failed it to do that. They've just not yet achieved that. What we've created to account for this is a little bit of flexibility on our side. So we have some firm gas from two fields up on the slope, and we have more flexible gas from a third field up on the North Slope, so that we could potentially be able to bring in that Pantheon gas in exchange for that flexible gas supply. All of the other gas supplies on the North Slope that we've identified would require some level of gas treatment. And just to give you an understanding, utility grade is usually around 2% CO2, and you have a number of fields up there. I think North Star is around 5%, I believe, at Endicott, or Point Thompson is somewhere around 4%. So if you're getting gas, and Prudhoe Bay itself is around 13%. So if you're getting gas from any of those fields, you're going to have to treat it. This is not the same level of treatment that you require for LNG. For LNG, you have to get down to around 50 parts per million. And the reason for that is that CO2 will turn into ice at a temperature higher than when methane turns into liquid. So you'll end up with ice going through your system and blocking it up. Phase one is about utility grade gas. And so for phase one, the treatment wouldn't be required to go down 50 parts per million, but more around 2%.
Follow-up, Senator Myers.
Yeah, just one last one. So, Mr. Kissinger, what I'm hearing is that unless Great Bear finds those condensates or the liquids that they're looking for, too, that helps make the economics of their project work, your options are either A, pay a higher price for the Great Bear gas until they find those liquids, or B, getting gas from another source, but then you're going to have to do some sort of treatment, which is also going to add some money to the eventual price.
Senator Myers to the chair. Yeah, I'd say it's strongly leaning towards B on that.
Okay, great.
So until they're able to demonstrate, you know, commercial development and achieve their own FID and have a, you know, published plan of development, then we need to ensure that we have access to gas that is very firm. And that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Sort of boots and suspenders, if you will.
Further questions on slide 25? Seeing none. Slide 26.
All right. Again, Dan Stickle for the record. Slide 26 lays out our assumptions around current law taxes and how they would relate to the AKLNG project. So under current law, the full 20 mils property tax would apply to the gas treatment plant and the pipeline. The LNG export facility is exempt from state tax. So under current law, it would only pay the municipal tax, which is about 8 mils in the Kenai borough. Mm-hmm. We assume that the project developer would not pay corporate income tax. We assume that some but not all of the upstream owners pay corporate income tax in line with the current situation. Production tax is modeled under our current production tax law. For gas, there is a 13% gross tax with a tax ceiling for qualifying in-state gas use. For oil, there is a net profits tax with a gross minimum tax floor. And as I mentioned earlier, we include the complex interactions between oil tax, gas tax, lease expenditures, and per taxable barrel credits in our modeling of production tax impacts of the project.
All right, I see no questions. Slide 29.
Slide 27, if I could.
Pardon me, did I skip? Pardon me, sorry.
Touches on some of the key uncertainties in the forecast. Prices are uncertain, both for oil and gas market prices, as well as for project costs. LNG markets are uncertain. You're seeing that play out in real time with the events over the past month and a half. Project timelines are uncertain, and the upstream oil impacts are an uncertainty as well. We talked a little bit about the Prudhoe Bay impacts and our assumption that there is no net impacts. There could be increased or decreased production there. Additionally, having the gas line in place would improve the economics of oil exploration and production for fields that are not in our production forecast. So right now, if a company goes out, does some exploration, finds a gas field, that's not monetizable. But with a gas line in place, there would be a market for a field that has both oil and gas, or is primarily a gas field.
I see no questions.
Slide 28 touches on the two scenarios that we've modeled. So we have a current law scenario, which assumes the project would go forward under current law and looks just to show what the revenues and economics of that would look like. and then we model the bill in front of the committee, which exempts the project from state and municipal property tax and replaces with the alternative volumetric tax, keeping all the other elements of the current fiscal system in place.
Again, no questions.
All right. So slide 29 starts to get into some of the outputs of the modeling. So this slide summarizes key outputs over 10, 20, and 30 years of full project production under current law and our the bill in front of the committee. So through 2062, actually this is just under current law and our baseline assumption. So assuming the project went forward under current law without any tax changes, there would be $29.7 billion of state revenues over life of project, $22.6 billion of federal revenues, $17.3 billion of municipal revenues. There would be a little over $60 billion of revenues to the upstream owners and a little over $70 billion of revenues to the midstream owners. Now, keeping in mind that those are for the upstream and midstream, those are the cash flow revenues. So those are gross revenues, not profits, net of costs. In terms of cost of supply, our baseline assumption results in a 2033 price of $4.86 per thousand cubic feet for in-state sales and $9.07 per thousand cubic feet for LNG sales. These would be the break-even sales prices for the gas sold to the utilities. The price paid by the end consumers would be a little bit higher.
No questions.
And then slide 30 shows a chart of those annual state revenues under the current law analysis. There would be a little over $200 million per year. These are just the state revenues. Over $200 million a year of property tax paid to the state, and another $600 million per year of royalties and corporate income tax, about $1 billion of state revenue total under the current law scenario with the production tax added. One thing to note here is you will note a little dip there in 2038 and say, what's going on there? So that represents some one-time impacts of some additional spending at Point Thompson. So we're expecting that there would be an initial outlay of capital and then some additional outlay of capital in 2038. And to some of the questions earlier, you do see for the first few years of production, there are some negative production tax revenues, and then those turn very positive once the project gets to full output.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll ask this now just in case we run out of time. The same question would apply on slide 32 under the proposed legislation, because it doesn't seem to change unless we alter the proposed legislation. So those that year 2028 and 2030, when the revenue to the state is negative in the near term, when we are sort of desperate for funds, mm-hmm. How, Mr. Stickle, how do we avoid that? That is to say, we've got these huge profits in the out years. How do we shift those into the out years? So we'll get slightly less tax revenue in the out years, but we will prevent ourselves from going negative in those 2 years. That is, we will shift the risk. It'll be sort of borne by everyone rather than Alaska assuming that risk. And by the way, you know, losing short-term dollars that are very precious right now because the gas and increased oil and other projects hasn't started flowing. So how do we take that slight negative, push it out into the future when we will have more revenues flowing?
Sure, Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So you know that there would be a variety of policy levers that could be implemented there. The reduction in state revenues for those couple years, which again, it's really only 2029 and 2030 that we're showing a net reduction in state revenues. It becomes a net positive starting in 2031. It would be various levers related to the oil and gas production tax.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
So I'll say, yeah, it's not a ton of money, and so I don't think that there should be any opposition from the folks who would have to forego it for a little while when we've got these huge profits coming. But it matters to us because we're in deficit, or we're sometimes in deficit these days when there isn't a war going on. What would be the most efficient way for us to shift those costs? I know there are a variety of policy levers. What would be the most efficient way to shift those costs into the out years?
Sure, Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So I'm not sure if I would be able to identify the most efficient way, and there's different ways of defining efficiency. You know, some of the interactions there, minimum tax floor is one of the levers, per taxable barrel credits, and how those apply against the oil tax and the gas tax, and where those apply in the calculation. And then the deduction of lease expenditures. Those are kind of the factors that are driving that production tax that you would want to look at.
Follow
thank
up.
Thank you. No, that's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Myers.
Yeah, along that line, Mr. Stickle, I seem to remember that back in the 70s, pipeline construction took a little longer than we anticipated at first, and so the state was kind of starting to run out of money around 1975 or so. We implemented, if I remember correctly, a oil reserves tax, which then was credited against production tax once production started. Are you familiar with something along those lines being used for gas projects in other places, or is that something that's out there?
Senator Myers, through the chair, so I am familiar with the concept. There was some discussion about the prudential concept back during the Walker administration. That is certainly one policy tool that could be looked at as well.
Thank you.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to sort of illustrate why I care so much about that little dip that seems like not a big deal. We've got all these profits coming. And I think if you can apply those to the future, then everybody is well off. But that little dip right there, to me, represents closed elementary schools in Anchorage. That's what that is, and I'd like us to avoid that, not just Anchorage, elsewhere too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. As Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Looking, I want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. There's a series of dark, used blue a couple times, and that dark blue, that dark blue line going from 2033 and out on the very bottom there of the graph, that looks like property taxes. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And that appears to be reflecting about $250 million in state property taxes. Is that right?
Senator Rutkowski, that's correct.
So I'm just curious why, when I asked the question before about how much state property taxes we would get under current law, we were told $90 million. And now this is reflecting $250 million. Did I misunderstand that answer?
Sure. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. So there's state property taxes on the project are part of this. There's also additional state property taxes associated with additional development that is not subject to the project. So this would be additional property taxes on the incremental investment that we're seeing in Point Thompson and Prudhoe Bay. And then again, the $90 million was a rough estimate off the top of my head, and we will provide the exact number for for the current law revenue.
I could.
Follow up.
And I'm looking ahead a slide, because if here it's showing at $250 million, but if you flip ahead a slide, it looks like it's just a tiny, tiny blip. Am I reading that correct? Maybe slide 31? Two slides, 32.
Sure. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. So clearly, it appears I misspoke on the $90 million guesstimate earlier, and I will correct that for the record.
Okay. So the just to be clear, the actual loss to the state from state property taxes is not $89 million, but rather closer to $250 million per year. Is that Fair to say.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, we will provide the detailed state property tax revenues under current law and under our AVT scenario. I have the year-by-year numbers just for AVT in front of me, so unfortunately I don't have the current law detailed numbers in front of me, just this chart.
You can look at that chart and see that it's about $250 million for property taxes every year, and then if you go ahead two slides, it's used like nothing.
Yes,
correct, Senator Wilkowski. So about $200 million a year lower across the board from removing the property tax.
Well, it's not even 200. It's closer to 240 or so million lower. 241 million lower. Is that about right?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, again, we will provide the exact numbers for the committee.
Yeah. That's kind of a big mistake to make. Would you agree to represent to this committee that we're only going to lose $89 million when, in fact, it's $241 million? Isn't that kind of a big mistake to make?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, yes, I misspoke. I apologize, and okay. I'll correct the record.
Thank you.
So for the public who are listening, what we're doing is we're looking at slide 30. That's under current law. And you see the high bars going up to $1 billion in state revenues. But if you look ahead to slide 32, that's what it looks like under the proposed law. Now, just sticking with the current law, as I look at this graph, and we've seen this graph many times with oil development, right? Companies investing, and then production comes online, and their profits increase, and they show a piece of it in the graph that is the state's revenue. What would be interesting, of course, is to see what the Glenfarne profit graph looks like, because that isn't reflected here. This is only talking about state revenues. I would wonder what the profits are to Glenfarne that interests them so much in being in the middleman for this project. But clearly that is not available to us. Are there any other questions on slide 30? Yes, Senator Klayman.
If I'm looking at slide 30 and slide 32, mm-hmm. and I'm just looking at the royalties and the production taxes, which I believe on both are the top bars. The lighter blue on the top is production tax. The gray underneath that is the royalties. If we had the exact numbers, would those be the same amount of royalties and production tax in each year on these two graphs? Or is there a distinction between the royalty volume and the production tax payments in these two different estimates?
Sure. Senator Klayman, through the chair. So the royalty and production tax should be the same. So, again, our assumption is that the midstream project is by the third-party developer and completely independent of the upstream. And so we're assuming the same price and the same volumes to the upstream producer, and so then the same royalties and production tax.
Follow-up.
Is there any analysis? I know one of the suggestions that's been made, at least by other presenters, is that we don't even get the project if we don't give the property tax reduction. So is there, and it's effectively slide 30 is assuming we get the project even if we don't do the property tax. Is there any analysis that's trying to look at different levels of property tax and how that impacts royalties and production taxes?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, so we do present, we present the total royalties and production taxes that we're assuming for upstream. One could, compare the royalties. If you assume that the project would not go forward without the tax relief, then those total revenues would be a delta. But again, we assume we're laying out this current law scenario as a baseline and assume that the same amount of gas would be produced and that the same price would be paid to the upstream. So those royalties and production tax revenues wouldn't change. So we're not touching the upstream tax at all with Senate Bill 280. We're only touching the tax on the midstream. And the property tax relief does not extend to upstream oil and gas property.
We are at 5 o'clock, but we're really at the core of the presentation. Are you available to come back tomorrow morning, Mr. Stickle? We have a meeting at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
I would be delighted.
Well, we'll try to believe you'd be delighted, but thank you. I would appreciate that.
I believe his definition of delighted and mine are a little different.
Thank you very much for speaking to us today. So at this time then, we're at the end of our agenda. We'll be back at it, as I said, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in this room, and we'll be continuing on this subject. After Mr. Stickle concludes tomorrow morning, we have Gaffney Klein on the agenda to speak. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:59 p.m.